Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose, Rose Colombo, right here for you on Colombo Chronicles Live.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trial. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up, because today we have a really special guest. And he'll be joining us in the world of authors and experts in just a little while. And his name is Vernon Ennals. And Vernon Ennals is an author who authored a book on child as a child abuse victim. And he pens this hard-hitting graphic book on his rape and sexual abuse as a six-year-old boy. You will not want to miss this story. Vernon Ennals aims to inspire other child sexual abuse victims to come forward. And page 6 of Vernon Ennals Jr.'s book, There's Something Your Son Needs to Tell You, reads, quote, I still remember his face, his breath, and hear his voice. Demand me to lie on my stomach. He would down my pants, my mother so proudly dressed me in, and then my Superman underwear. When he was done, he walked me to school and warned me, if you tell anyone, I will kill your mother. Pretty powerful words that many children hear who are sexually abused somewhere every day in America and around the world. Author Vernon Ennals, E-N-N-E-L-S, Jr., lived with the horrible secret of being sexually abused and ashamed for some 40 years before he was able to recently summon the courage to tell his own family. That is not unusual for children not to tell anyone. And not to tell their parents. Quote, studies show that 1 in 6 men have been sexually abused, said Mr. Ennals. Most are afraid to talk about it. That is a very high percentage. 1 in 6 men have been sexually abused. So, on that note, we will very soon enter into the world of authors and experts. You know, Breitbart tweeted on February 4th, 2011, before he mysteriously died, allegedly from a heart attack. And then his coroner died suddenly, and his assistant coroner died suddenly. Breitbart tweeted on February 4th, 2011, how Prague guru John Podesta isn't a household name as world-class underage sex slave op cover-up upperer defending unspeakable dregs escapes me. When I read this quote clear back in February 4th, 2011, I had already known about the children who were being sexually abused, because I had founded a grassroots movement I entitled women fight back, because children were being wrongfully taken from innocent parents through CPS and family law judges. And I was exposing this information on radio and TV since 1989. I created my own cable television show because no one wanted to talk about these issues. So I brought on victims, and we expose some of these stories. I interviewed Senator John DeCamp twice, who flew out to meet me on my issues while he was writing the book, The Franklin Cover-Up, and was investigating under the Committee of the Franklin Cover-Up in Nebraska that led to the steps of the White House, to CEOs, to police chiefs, to newspapers around the United States, and to the steps of the leaders of foreign nations and CEOs around the world. So this is a gigantic problem, and children are at high risk, and young females, and yet the Democrats in the United States of America refuse to secure our borders, to uphold their sworn oath to secure the borders, and protect the welfare of all Americans, especially those of babies and minor children, who they know and have knowledge that this is an international pedophile ring of wealthy people who are involved, not just the average Joe. And then they migrated under Obama's reign. Hillary and Obama secretly pre-planned to migrate 5 million Palestinians into the USA linked to Hamas, who's linked to Hezbollah, which Argentina just designated as a terrorist organization. And many of those countries, under their ideologies, believe it's a right to rape women and to engage in pedophilia and marry little children. So we have a serious problem, not only in America, but in Europe and in New Zealand, Australia, Canada, Mexico, Central America, and around the world. Pedophilia doesn't stop in the USA. It also extends to Russia and China. There's perverts everywhere. So let's take a look at some of the statistics related to child abuse by InvisibleChildren.org, Kids at Risk. It's called CARA, K-A-R-A. You may want to support them, Kids Count, Children's Defense Fund, and American SPCC. They state nationally over 7 million United States children come to the attention of Child Protective Services each year, according to a Children's Bureau 2015 report. Well, it wasn't so long ago that Senator Nancy Schaefer exposed a scathing report about some agents in the Child Protective Service agencies who were actually removing children from innocent parents and taking bribes. I call it Kids for Bribes. So who can you trust if there are judges who are pedophiles and sympathetic to pedophiles and rapists? If there are lawyers, which there are lawyers, judges, not all, but there are some, and who knows who's who, right? They just arrested a Democrat in America because he was trafficking children. He's a lawyer, high-profile lawyer, trafficking little children and torturing them. So we don't know who's who in America. So just because someone has a title or someone is wealthy, who people tend to worship and want to be like and are seduced easily by people with titles and money, people need to be more discerning, especially about who their children are hanging out with. 37% of American children are reported to Child Protective Services by their 18th birthday. that is very high percentage, 37%. And I'm going to assume that number is even higher today since these statistics were reported, because it doesn't give a date. And so based on the fact it doesn't give a specific date, we can count on the fact that this problem has increased, not decreased. Okay, well, here is one date. Nationally, over 7 million U.S. children come to the attention of Child Protective Services each year, according to a Children's Bureau 2015 report. So that's almost, that's going on 5 years ago. So you can just add to the percentages. 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually abused before they turn 18 years old. 1 in 4, 1 in 6, that could be your child. 34% of people who sexually abuse a child are family members. 3% of girls age 10 or younger at the time of their first rape, victimization, and 30% of girls were between the ages of 11 and 17. Just think about that. How many children are actually being sexually abused in this nation? And those numbers are from 2015. So you can increase those percentages. And on that note, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts with our very special guest. So don't touch that dial, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Listening is an art. An art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening. Columbo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Columbo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to columbochronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Columbo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, columbochronicles.com.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. We're back on Columbo Chronicles Live, and we're about to enter into the world of authors and experts with a wonderful author, very special author. His name is Vernon Ennals, Jr. He lived with the horrible secret of being sexually abused, as I stated before at the beginning of the show, unashamed for some 40 years before he was able to recently summon the courage to tell his own family. Studies show that 1 in 6 men have been sexually abused, said Mr. Ennals. Most are afraid to talk about it. Well, he's here to talk about it in his special book, There's Something Your Son Needs to Tell You. And I think every parent and every grandparent and every guardian needs to be aware of this book. And so let's get started and let's say hello to Vernon Enels, E-N-N-E-L-S, if you want to look up his name online. Hi, Vernon. How are you today?
Pretty good in yourself. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm very excited to have you on our show because children are very high risk today. And they've always been at high risk, but people didn't talk about these issues like they are today, especially with online information. And so it was like suppressed. And so nobody talked about it. And even if you did talk about it, people didn't want to talk about it. So I'm very happy to have you here today because it is a very important topic. And so you wrote this book, Something Your Son Wants to Tell You. Why did you write this particular book now, 40 years later?
Well, I started writing the book 5 years ago, maybe 5.5 years ago. And I got through a process of the book that I decided to destroy it. I shredded the papers. I said I wasn't going to put it out simply because as I was writing a book, I realized I started thinking about how this would affect other people and how my family would feel and how certain people would feel. And I didn't want to hurt anybody, even though I was hurting, you know, myself. So I just kept it and I said, I'm not going to do it. Then last year, as I was starting to see other people come out to continue to tell their story and stories and was hearing how people didn't, some people didn't believe them or people would say, why did you wait so long? And you're probably lying and different things. Probably about November, I think it was about November 2018, I just put myself in like a little bubble for about 3 months. And I just started to write this book to share my story because it was a process that I needed to be healed myself. Even though I went through therapy and different things, I never shared this tragedy with my family. So I decided to sit down and tell my mom and them, hey, this happened to me, because the person that did this to me at the age of 6, it probably was between the age of 6 and 7, he would do it pretty much almost every day as he would take right before he would take me to school. And I remember constantly he kept telling me that if I tell anyone, he would kill my mother. So for me at 6, I just kept this a secret in 7, 8, 9, and as time went on, I just didn't want to share it because I still feared that that would happen, and then I felt like that it was my fault.
Yes, I think a lot of victims feel like it's their fault. They did something. Even as a child, you must have done something wrong for this to happen to you. So tell me about your uncle. How old was he, and how did this even begin? I mean, that he decided to approach you, and where did all this take place?
Well, this actually, the person that did this to me was actually a family friend. So my mom that point, she was a single mother. And one of her close friends didn't live too far from the school that I was attending. So in the morning, about 6 o'clock or so, she would drop me off at her house to go off to work. Her friend's nephew was supposed to take me to school every day, just right across the street. And it actually was him. He was doing this to me. My mom's friend's nephew was doing this. And not only did he do it when he was taking to school, at times, even a couple of times when they visit our home, that tragedy continued to happen. And I try to get people to have the mindset. I was 6. I knew nothing about sex. I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know even at that point that even though my body might have said this is wrong, I didn't know until I got older and start to learn about my body and learn about sex and realize that this is wrong.
Of course not. You're only 6. People didn't actually know. Children don't know that, you know, about sex like some kids do today because of the internet. And
absolutely. And that's why I try to tell people too. You got to count. You got to go back 30 something years ago. We didn't have internet. We didn't have social media. We didn't have the technology and stuff that we have now. Even in my book, I talk about the first time I even saw a sexual act. Is visiting a friend's house, and they had satellite TV or something back then, and you know, with stations that you normally don't have on regular stations. Like, oh, that's what I because you wasn't that, it wasn't that accessible.
Right, and back then too, there were still movies that were PG and
PG,
and
yep.
X-rated and adults only, and but slowly and surely that went by the wayside. Now they're all X-rated.
Yeah.
Even if it says PG.
Yes.
I mean, I've been shocked myself. I'm like, whoa, I got my kid here, you know, when they were younger, you know. I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know. So, so what do you want your readers to walk away with after they read your book?
Well, it's what I want people to walk away from is I want this continued to be a conversation that we have amongst our families. We at times want to criticize everyone for the things they do to our communities and stuff, but it's time for families to take back control of their family, starting with their own family and their kids. Too many parents are trying to be best friends with their kids instead of being parents. And mm-hmm. take the time to sit down and have effective conversations with your kids, simply at the dinner table at times, just saying, how you doing, how was day, how was school, to build that relationship. So I want them to walk away from this book to bring awareness that this happens more than people talk about. Even during your opening, I heard you speak about one out of six men or boys was sexually molested, and going back to statistics back to 2015. Again, the statistics is built, data is built upon people actually reporting. There's so many people like myself who don't report it, to just let it move forward and just think it will go away, and it don't. So I wanted to bring awareness to people and saying, hey, let's continue the conversation so we can stop this happening to another kid, to another individual. Let's stop sweeping under the rug, including in our churches. For me, I remember going to my church when I was in my teenage years and wanted to express that, hey, this happened to me. And I remember speaking to some people, and they told me, pray about it, give it to God, let it go. I mean, he'll handle it. And I remember trying to do that, and it didn't work for me because it was still hurtful and damaging. And then later on, as I got older, somebody from the church tried to make a move on me, another man come on to me. And it's like, this is an issue that we need to talk about so that we can deal with. So I want people to walk away with bringing awareness and continue the conversation and to stop this from happening to another person.
Yes, and I also think that it's important that children have a way that they're taught and told a way to get away from pedophiles if possible.
Yeah.
and to tell somebody immediately. They need to be told that it's okay because it's wrong. I don't, you know, instead of waiting until something happens and never having said a word about it, and the child has no idea why this adult's doing this to them, right?
Yes, and that's why, exactly, because I look at, my son just turned 7 years old 2 weeks ago, and even writing this book, it encouraged me because I look, he was six when I started the process, and I look at him and say, wow, he's so vulnerable, he's so innocent, he doesn't know anything too much, he's learning, and that's where I was at that age. And you think about, as our kids, you want to open their mind, get to teach them certain things. So for me as a parent, and I'm not saying all parents should do it, it's kind of hard to teach my kids, girl or boy, and say, hey, your private area is a cookie or this, and you make nicknames and stuff for them. And because I've done my process of even touring for the book, a parent came up to me and she explained to me, she was like, for a long time, my uncle was molesting my daughter, and I didn't know what was going on. And my daughter kept trying to tell me, but I was effectively listening, because she said her daughter kept saying, uncle, and she would name his name, he took my cookie. He took my cookie. And the parent was like, oh, well, maybe he was hungry. Maybe she didn't identify that the cookie met her private area, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So her daughter was trying to tell her this happened to her, but the parent always called her private area the cookie. Like, oh, don't let anybody touch your cookie and cookie. So she didn't click that cookie meant that he was molesting her. And until finally she came out and she pointed to the area of my cookie, and that's when it clicked. So even when you speak into your kids, it's important to use, you know, real names in a sense at the age appropriate time that they can relate to, because they sometimes, like for me, I wanted to tell my mom what was going on with me. I wanted to have the conversation with her, but that fear came in that my father wasn't around, and the last thing I want to do is lose my mother.
So what age did you finally tell her, and what was her reaction?
I finally told my mother 7 months ago. So at the age of 44, I sat my mother down in the process to tell her that this happened to me. And immediately she felt like it was her fault. She felt like as a parent she let me down, that I have other siblings. She couldn't believe that this happened to me, and she apologized. She was hurt, and she was broken. And the look on her face and the hurt that she felt was something that I tormented for years of not wanting to see. But then after releasing it, it felt like one of the biggest burdens in life was just finally released off of me, and it felt like at that moment I felt healed because of the secret that I was holding, that I finally released it.
And what about this family friend? How old was he then, and is he still alive now, and did you ever confront him?
The family friend, he was about maybe 20 years old. And I'm just guessing the age, about 20 years old. And it's kind of ironic that how the situation happened as far as him. As time went on, there was a big roller skate ring in a city in which I lived in. And coming from the roller skate ring from that facility, someone walked up to him and shot him in the head and killed him. And you know, it was gone. So at that point of him dying, I thought that, and at this point I'm in my teenage years, I thought that, you know, I would be relieved. I thought that it would go away because he's gone, and it still didn't. And to make the pain even worse, the church that I was attending at the time later on purchased the roller skating ring at the church, and they made it into a church. So while I was going to church every week,
that is very profound right there.
Yeah, I was constantly being reminded of what happened to the victim, I mean, the person that that did this to me in this area of where now it's called my place of worship.
Well, God's miracles, right? I mean, seriously,
yes.
Turn a bad thing into something good because God, he went violently to his death. And then
by my mind, I have to think, I wonder if he did it to someone else, you know.
Exactly. That was my first thought, was somebody came back and, you know, because karma, I mean, you can look at Jeffrey Epstein right now. He was arrested in 2008 for child trafficking internationally, little girls. I was young as 12 years old, and then kidnapping them and forcing them into prostitution and orgies and who knows what all. And then we don't even know if some died, and they don't even know how many kids. The FBI let this go on forever, and now again he's arrested, and this time they aren't letting him out of prison. But, I mean, things could have been a lot worse, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because of the trafficking that's going on now and the sex slaves. And, I mean, it is horrendous. That's why I'm happy that you have written your book, Something Your Son Wants to Tell You, or it could be something your daughter wants to tell you or your kids want to tell you. And so anybody could read this book, because it can happen to both boy and girl. And the parents are feeling guilty at that point. Of course you would feel guilty, like you didn't protect your child. You should have known. You should have been aware. Yeah, I think all parents would go through that phase. And so... So when you go to the church now, is that the church you're going to now still?
I'm not at that church. And matter of fact, I wound up moving to help another pastor start a church. So I actually live in Arizona now. So I'm not even in the same state that this happened. But also in the book that I wrote too, I even speak about how I was broken, how I was hurt, how I was still walking around holding this secret But as long as I stayed busy, it was okay. And then in the process of it, I felt like the church kind of broke me too, because even at a young age, the church that I was attending at that point, they wound up using my credit and getting credit cards and a car with it and just different things. So in my book, I discuss even in my brokenness, in the process of going to a place to be healed, I was broken there too. And
that's
for
a very
me,
good
I had,
point. That's a really important point, that I think the only healing is from God, right?
Absolutely. And I discuss how, for me, I had to divorce people and I had to marry God, because my focus, I found as growing up, was more into satisfying people and not disappointing people and worrying about what people said and done to bring validation at times, that I moved towards people and less towards God. So I had to divorce them, and my relationship with Christ had to increase. So as I got to know God for myself and not looking at him through people, the healing process really began. And I was able to take advantage over myself, and then that's what taught me in times to get my voice back, where I was able to speak using my own voice.
Excellent. And so why do you think that there's so many pedophiles? I mean, who would have ever imagined there are this many pedophiles in America and around the world?
Well, some people say hurt people, which is true to a point, but I also say not all hurt people, because even though I was hurt, I never had a desire to molest another child or do anything to anyone at all. If it's anything, I started a nonprofit organization called Young Executives to try to help kids and try to teach kids and educate kids. So I do feel as though that people are in a position where they're hurting at times for maybe many reasons, and they pray over people that don't have a voice or don't have any control. It's the same mindset that I ask myself of, why some men out there, using men as example, abuse women, because they feel like some women may be vulnerable, that I'm stronger than them, they hopeless, they need me. And when I look at pedophiles and stuff, they have that same mindset that look at it to say, okay, I can attack this child and do this to this child. There's nothing this child would do to me. And then looking at it to say that I will lure the child in with money or threats or whatever and bring that fear in. And when you have that fear, which is false evidence appearing to be real, when you have that fear there, that would help. That would be in a position to manipulate that child to the point that you can do whatever you want to that person. So as pedophiles continue to do this, they feel as though at times they won't get it caught. And that's why even writing this book is like, hey, let's start exposing these people, especially as men. We don't even want to talk about that at times that our chest is hurting to go to the doctors. We don't want to talk about that, you know, we had this cold for 3 days, let's go get some medicine. We're just like, nah, we cool, because men sometimes we taught, don't cry, you're weak, you know, don't let them see that other side of you. So to turn around and say, hey, I was sexually assaulted, to say that for a man, we don't want to do that. That's another reason why I wanted to write this book. I wanted to come from a man's perspective to say, hey, this happened. So when you do see celebrities and stuff maybe, or people, famous people, anybody on the street or whatever, as attacking kids, sometimes you sit back and you ask the question and say, hey, did anybody attack you when you were younger? You know, did this happen to you? And a lot of times in chapter 10, I have about several stories that people didn't want to say their names, of course, but they talk about, as men, sharing experiences of what happened to them. And it's like, this happens more than we really want to talk about.
It does. And the problem is that it affects a lot of males, you know, not being able to express what happened to them or tell anyone. And then you have a lot of angry men growing up, or you have them striking out at women because their mother didn't protect them, who is like the protector of children and the nurturer. And so it creates a lot of psychological problems. And then if they
Absolutely.
Do marry a woman, they could be looking at that woman and seeing their mother, right?
Yes.
And striking out?
And it's one of the chapters I also discuss about therapy. It's important to go to therapy, you know, and sit down with a licensed counselor and allow that person to help you to sort through your situation. Because for me, that helped me. Because at times, so I just give it to God and give it to him. But I had to sit down with someone and to open up, why did this happen? Because I also was raised by single moms, and my father wasn't in my life. So growing up, I used to think like, hey, if my dad was in my life, even though our relationship is better now, but my mind used to think like, would this had happened to me if he was in my life? And then I still see some kids where fathers and mothers are there, and it happened too. But it just made me to want to be a better man, because society at times teaches us as a man that we come along and saying that, hey, we have been molested or whatever. Our mindset thinks too that people might think we're gay or homosexual or something is wrong with us or queer or whatever the case might be. And then again, we build up that wall too to pretty much say, okay, I don't want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to discuss it. So we hold that secret to ourselves.
Yes, I think there's a lot of men out there who've held it in and never talked about it and just suppressed it in the back of their minds. And it has to bother people, I mean, no matter what. I mean, I remember when I was a little girl and several instances, but saved me from being kidnapped or worse. But each time, but there are men out there praying around. But I didn't put it together till I got older, of course, like when I was walking in front of a movie theater with my brother and sister waiting for my parents to come and get us, and I was doing the hopscotch on the little squares. This man, I still remember him. He had red hair, blue eyes, grabbed my arm. I was just a little girl, and he said, "What are you doing, baby?" And he was like, I mean, he could have just kidnapped me right there.
Wow.
And so those instances are, you know, you never forget them. I mean, it's not like it's changed my life or anything, but I didn't really think about all those instances until all this information started coming to light. And then you're like, they're everywhere. I mean, you can be kidnapped anywhere. You know, and there were a lot of people. I mean, it was like downtown, and there were a lot of people. Nobody would pay attention. They would just think it's a screaming kid, a brat, right? Even if you're screaming for help. So, so when you say you have a nonprofit organization, do you teach them what questions to ask their children, or how to approach them, and what does your organization do?
Well, I had my nonprofit junior executives, it's a youth leadership program. So we teach them fundamental leadership skills. We have Toastmasters come in. We're accredited through 7 Habits of Highly Effective Leader or Team. We deal with how budgeting and finances and community service. We really work on that mind to help develop their mind, to help them, to teach them how to make effective decisions. And in the process of doing that, like for myself, I didn't have that. Growing up, we'll prepare the young people to give them a voice to speak and how to get their points across to people. So I developed the program out of my pain and out of my hurt. And it wasn't easy because, you know, some people, you know, don't want to put kids in a program unless something is tragic and they need to have some community service hours. But for this program, we try to prepare them so if something come along, that they can have a conversation. So, again, think about that, too. I started a nonprofit, and I'm hurt myself through what happened to me and wanting to share my experience with these kids, but I was scared and frightened to do it. So even writing a book, I wrote the book so that it was easy for even teenagers to read. So this is something I'm even incorporating in my program to say, hey, with the parents' consent, read the book. It's not anything graphic in there to the point that, you know, your kids can't read, but we want to bring awareness that, hey, this is an issue out here and how we can come together. Because even though you think about some kids in school, it might not have happened to that individual, but maybe we'll open their mind up to see maybe a friend of theirs that might be acting weird and they don't know why, to maybe ask them the question sometime and say, hey, did anyone do anything to you? Because a lot of abuse, as you said in your opening, comes from people that we know. It's family, it's relatives, it's friends, there are some people that are strangers too, but a lot is happening in our own circle, and at times we are ignorant to the point of not knowing that who it is. So my program is just trying to really help the kids to regain a voice or find their voice so that they could be a productive person in our community.
That's fantastic. I'm so happy you're doing that because, you know, when bad things happen in our lives, and bad things happen to everybody, some people just walk away. Some people don't want to hear about it, don't want to talk about it forever, and they take it to their graves. And then there's people who step out of it, and they get their own help they need, and then they become proactive, and they try to help other people, especially the youth. In this case, especially the youth, because we have too much violence and too much pedophilia, too much hate, too many divorces, too many latchkey kids, too many fathers missing in action, or even mothers missing in action in some cases. And so for you to have created a nonprofit to help the young people, I think it's fantastic, and I commend you for that. And so you're so welcome. And now is your time to shine, Vernon Annals, and talk about your book, Something Your Son Wants to Tell You, and then and then also any messages you want to give to parents and or any young people listening out there, and where to get your book, and how to, if you have a website or social media.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. Again, thank you so much for the opportunity. My book entitled There's Something That Your Son Needs to Tell You is an open letter, even to my son. It's a book that I wanted to write to give him a journey of his father's life from the time from being a kid all the time to being an adult and even being a father to him. I want people to get the book to read it to bring awareness, like I said, to them and also their families. Share the book. It's for me, it's just really getting the movement or continue the movement moving forward to give understanding. They can go to Vernon Annals, VernonEnnals.com for more information about our ministry, in a sense, to find out information about the book. The book can also be purchased at Barnes & Noble, barnesandnoble.com and amazon.com. As well, and we are excited to share this opportunity. Even as a young man, my father wasn't in my life, and I could have been on drugs. I could have been a gangbanger. I could have been out in the streets and stuff, but I made a decision, even through my trial and tribulation, that I wanted to be a better me. I wanted to be a healthier me, and so I want to encourage the parents out there, like I said earlier, don't worry about being your best friend to your kids. Don't go to your kids and make statements like, well, you know, you can come to me about anything. You could talk to me about anything. Because 9 times out of 10, the kids are not going to come to the parents and have these type of conversations. They'll come to the parents because they want a new toy or clothes or shoes or want a car. But a lot of times when tragic things happen, the kids won't come to the parents. So as a parent, it's okay to investigate. Ask questions. Be nosy. Find out what's going on. Your kids would appreciate that years to come. But this technology now, you can find out where your kids are. Ask the simple questions of, hey, how was school today? How did things come along when he was at Johnny's house? Does Johnny's dad live there? Does this happen? Do they have any guns? Do they have this? Is it whatever? Do some researches before you just allow your kids to just spend a night at somebody's house and then come back later and say, oh, I can't believe that this happened to my child. And as young people, if it's any young people out here that's listening that has been, or even old person that has been sexually abused or anything, it's not your fault. You did absolutely nothing wrong. But you have a voice now. You have a voice to speak and share your truth. And in the process of sharing your truth, you will heal through the process. And if you don't have an example of somebody to share your truth, I will be that example to understand and tell people that it feels great at 45 now years old that I can finally say that that burden, that mask that I wore on my face for over 30 something years has finally been pulled off. And now I feel free.
That is a wonderful, wonderful time to shine on Colombo Chronicles. And I just want to thank you so much for all you're doing and for your book, There's Something Your Son Needs to Tell You. And I hope everyone goes out and gets a copy, because it's not just parents, it's guardians, it's grandparents, it's babysitters, it's daycare centers. All of them need to know when a child is acting out or it might be another inner problem in his little body and soul that he doesn't know how to express or is afraid to express. So again, thank you so much for writing There's Something Your Son Wants to Tell You, Vernon Ennals. And God bless you, and maybe we'll talk
God
to you again
you
in the future.
Thank you,
thank
you for your time. Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. And that was Vernon Ennals, Leaving the Building. And you can get his book on Amazon.com, Something Your Son Wants to Tell You. And he gave you all his information so that you can also contact him and perhaps have your son join his nonprofit organization that helps young people succeed in life. He grew up in Baltimore, Maryland, and of course Baltimore is in the news right now, so thank God he is familiar with Baltimore. So he can give his input on that, too. And he's now in Arizona. And I have family members in Arizona as well. A lot of people moving to Arizona from California. And so he holds a BS and an MBA in business management. And he has pulled himself up by his bootstraps and overcame his childhood molestation, and you can too if you are proactive and you believe in God and you believe in yourself. So on that note, we're going to enter into the world of politics and commentary, but I will be back in just a moment, so don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, this is the Rose Colombo, and we just left the world of authors and experts with our special guest, Vernon Ennals, and his book, Something Your Son Wants to Tell You. Be sure to get a copy at Amazon.com or check it out. Now we're entering into the world of Rose's commentary, and this topic is Andrew Breitbart tweet before death adds fuel to online speculation of DC sex trafficking ring. This is published in the Washington Times Online, and Douglas Ernst wrote it on 11/28/2016, and it's very timely for today with the Weinstein, the Epstein, the Clintons, and Podesta, and Pizzagate, and Senator Nancy Schaefer, who was murdered after revealing her scathing report on some Child Protective Service agents taking bribes for kids by removing them from innocent parents, and never seen again. And then we have judges who remove innocent kids from parents going through divorce from innocent parents. And we also have the Franklin cover-up. We have that was suppressed along with the documentary. have the Pizzagate that was suppressed and pretty much just ignored and called a witch hunt. And then we have the Weinstein case that involved Hollywood celebs and wannabe young stars. And we have the parties in Hollywood with the liberals who invite children without their parents to swim, and with adults. And then we have the Epstein, the registered pedophile back in 2008, friends of the Clintons, and his frequent flyer, Lolita Express, with wealthy people who are in R at Orgy Island, and his ranch and his townhomes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So pedophilia is everywhere. It's always been around. Nobody wants to talk about it. The media doesn't want you to talk about it. But I've always talked about it on my former cable TV show, starting with NAMBLA, who was an organization that were authors, and James Hormel, who Clinton appointed as the ambassador of Luxembourg, was the key person. And I wrote to Dianne Feinstein, Senator Dianne Feinstein, as the CEO and founder of my former organization, Women Fight Back, told her that I opposed his nomination, but she said she approved it and gave me all his wonderful credentials. You can have as many credentials as you want. It doesn't mean you're not a pedophile. You can have all the titles in the world, all the awards and rewards, and you could still be a pedophile. You can be wealthier than anyone, and you could still be a pedophile. So Andrew Breitbart is making news even in death. Social media speculation of a sex trafficking ring in the nation's capital has burned up social media sites for weeks. Complicating matters is Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman, John Podesta's decision not to comment on the WikiLeaks-related emails for months. Explosive claims by internet sleuths, which were prompted after reading stolen documents belonging to Mr. Podesta, I guess have been suppressed too, as viciously phony. By Fox News' Howard Kurtz. A tweet by Mr. Breitbart shortly before his March 1, 2012 death is now being cited by online researchers as proof that they are on to something big. And it is something big, and it's always been something big, but unfortunately, children are at high risk, have always been at high risk, but nobody wanted to talk about it. So the article goes on again to say in the WashingtonTimes.com how Prague guru John Podesta isn't household name as world-class underage sex slave op cover-upper defending unspeakable drags escapes me, Mr. Breitbart wrote on February 4, 2011. Dregs. That's what Vice President Biden referred to all of the Trump supporters as dregs. Hillary Clinton refers to us as deplorables and so forth. Very sad. The conservative icon's death at age 43 was attributed to a heart attack, heart failure, according to this article. Knowledge of the late conservative's tweet sent Google searches for Andrew Breitbart skyrocketing Sunday night as news spread to members of Twitter, Reddit, Gab, Vote, and other social media platforms. Remember, this article was written in 2011, and it is still timely. One of America's best and most respected independent journalists at the time, he is making a very bold claim about John Podesta. Back then, based on his own research, former Huffington Post contributor David Seaman wrote on Gab Sunday night, quote, this is years before WikiLeaks came out. Mr. Seaman and others claim Mr. Podesta and his associates spoke in code in numerous documents released by WikiLeaks. One example includes a February 9, 2014 email with the subject line, "Did you leave a handkerchief?" It reads, "Hi, John. The realtor found a handkerchief. I think it has a map that seems pizza-related. Is it yours?" Question mark. Quote, a woman identified as Susaner asked, "They can send it if you want." Such wording led online sleuths to investigate Mr. Podesta's connections with D.C. power player James Elefantis, owner of Comet Ping Pong. The Democrat fundraiser and pizza place owner, who is mentioned in 16 different WikiLeaks documents, had a public Instagram account that features sexual innuendo and bizarre images of children. Accounts for Comet Ping Pong employees, which are now set to private, featured nudity involving men with slices of pizza strategically placed over their private parts. From this insane fabricated conspiracy theory, we've come under constant assault, Mr. Elefantis, 42 at the time, told the New York Times on November 21st. I've done nothing for days but try to clean this mess up and protect my staff and friends from being terrorized. It's endless, he said. The editorial board of the Washington Post also lambasted social media sleuths on November 25th in an op-ed titled, quote, Pizzagate shows how fake news hurts real people. Fake news, oh yeah. Wow. The allegations against Comet Ping Pong reported by the New York Times are absurd on their face and detached from any gossamer thread of fact, the newspaper wrote. How do they know that? How do they know that? Did they do a thorough investigation? They took root in the dark crevices of the web and took flight thanks to social media platforms whose witless whoas posture in the face of misinformation and outright lunacy is a civic embarrassment. Like 93% of Washingtonians, the restaurateur happened to support Ms. Clinton for president. He has some prominent Democratic friends, past and present, the Post continued. Mr. Elefantis' name surfaced in leaked email from Mr. Podesta's account, published by WikiLeaks, in which the two men discuss holding a Clinton fundraiser. As far as anyone knows, there is no more logic than that as to why Mr. Elefantis and his restaurant became targets. The First Amendment is a bulwark of democracy, but provides no protection for defamatory allegations published in knowing disregard for the truth. Mr. Elefantis is more than entitled to sue for defamation and libel if he can find the purveyors of the garbage heaved his way. And the reason I wanted to read this to you is because Weinstein and Epstein are in the news, and many high-powered people are being alleged to be frequent flyers on the Lolita Express and visiting Orgy Island, who are also linked to this alleged child sexual ring of pizza, known as Pizzagate. And then there's the Franklin cover-up, and again, like I said, Senator Nancy Schaefer's scathing report on CPS, Kids for Bribes. And then there were the courts, the judges who have also been... some family law courts who have been taking children away from women who accuse their husbands of being child molesters. Firsthand witnessed that for quite a long time, since the 90s. So very difficult for women and children to protect their children, although there are some female child molesters as well. So this is a mess, and this continues on, and this is why you must talk to your children. You must tell them it's okay to tell you about any perverts out there who approach them. disgusting people, to say the least. And so on that note, this is the Rose signing off, and hope you tune in every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. when we have our very special guest on a myriad of topics of human interest to you and your family for people around the world. And on that note, I'll say God bless you, God bless America, God bless the President of the United States, and all our legislators. Pray for them that they do the right thing for the sake of the women and children being trafficked or who have been trafficked and not located, and their parents and their families and all people everywhere. Stay healthy, stay happy, stay healthy, and stay alert.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.